accession number 18775, reel 4.
Danny Prout, reel 4.
Yeah, fortunately it didn't go off. I think the dampness might have affected them, I don't know. But well, our grenades were quite good and they got rid of them. But yeah, it was quite a moment, it was.
And then you decided to attack them?
Threw a couple of grenades. And as I say, we were unaware that this post, machine gun post, was on top of that little knoll. And anyway, we went, fell back, and the tanks in the meantime had come up. So we directed the tanks onto this position here, because we thought there might be more there. And as it happened, there was this machine gun. And we went up there later, and I got a burp gun from there, you know, around these Russian, used to call them burp guns, this machine gun. And then we were asked by the troop commander if we'd stay and, you know, recce and see if we can help them out, like, to pinpoint positions, and that's what we did during the course of the day.
But when you threw the grenade into the slit trench, or was it just one or two?
One. I don't know. It's hard to say. There might have been a few slit trenches. There were a few, because, we went back there later. There were a few slit trenches there, yeah. And I threw the one grenade, and I just beat a hasty retreat then. So it got rid of them, obviously.
And how soon after that did the tanks appear?
The tanks were there. They must have been called up, as I say, when the reinforcements can get through. And they came up then. I think they were there then. They hadn't appeared before, but they were there then, because we were called over, as I say, by the troop commander. Asked us if we'd try to pinpoint positions, one thing or another, and we should do.
Were these Centurion tanks?
Yeah, they were, what's the name, the 8th Hussars, yeah, Centurions, yeah.
How many tanks did you see?
In the troop. I don't know. I mean, in the troop, there was a troop there, but 5 or 6, I think. I'm not sure. I don't know how many are in the troop.
And who did you speak to?
And the tank commander, I think, the troop commander, I think they call him. I don't know whether he's an officer or a sergeant, but this particular tank we were more or less attached to, a sergeant in charge of that.
But, and what did, when you say you were spotting for the tank, what did that involve?
Well, actually, they asked us, they bombard this area, and they'd ask us to go forward and have a look around and see what if we could see anything particularly, you know. And then they had one of our chaps on top with a pair of binoculars and the Bren gun on top of one of the tanks there, and he was using the Bren gun most of the time. Funny thing was, he told me later, he said you nearly had it. I said, how do you mean? He said, well, he said, I was shouting to you. He said, you were going forward. He said, I was shouting to you. They were popping up behind you. I never saw them, you know. He said, I was afraid to fire. And he said, in case I hit you. And it's funny, Preston Little.
So you were asked to find targets for the tanks?
For the tanks, yes. If we could pinpoint any targets, yeah, for them. Yeah.
And did you find any targets?
Oh, we found quite a few, yeah. Yeah.
What kind of target?
Well, actually, you could. We would. The tanks were there, and we were. There's a road line run alongside. We were behind this road, and being forward, we could trace backwards and forwards, and we could see lots of what happened there. We had binoculars there, and we could see lots of what's in the background, and they were moving. I mean, you very well, they weren't our troops, you know, in that particular area. So we'd give them the wire, and they'd blast that particular area. But
how dangerous was it spotting for these tanks?
Well, it was a bit scary. I mean, it wasn't scary at the time, but it was. I don't know, but it was dangerous for you, because we didn't know who was there and what was there. But at a particular time, I Never fell, sir.
But did you get never fired on as you went to find the target?
Oh, we got fired on a couple of times, yeah, yeah. Especially one particular time, I think. I'm just trying to figure out where it was. Where was it? Anyway, we'd spotted something, and we weren't sure whether there was anything there. So we went up with this lance corporal and myself. We went up with went up a bit further, and apparently there was some behind us, which the tanks had seen. They were to the left of us. The tanks had seen, and they fired on these were to the left of us. We didn't realise that they were there. You see, because we came round them, but it's a funny thing. I never felt particularly afraid there. There was only one time when I felt afraid in Korea, I can say honestly, and that was the last action in October, I think it was.
October 50?
October 51. October, November, October. October 51, yeah. October, yeah. I think it was October. Yeah, it was October. Just before the battalion went out, we thought it was the last action. And we thought we were on our way out then. But we went forward. And we were on the side of a hill. And they started mortaring the Chinese. And it was really scary. The mortars were coming over and we'd hear a whoomp, whoomp, whoomp. And we dug a slit there and we dived into the slip, we stayed there, but that was where I really felt scared. You know, you couldn't see anything. You know, all these mortars were just coming across and dropping, and you hear this thump, 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 and you never know when the next one's going to land. You know, that's the only time I felt really scared.
But coming back to the Imjin battle, and you're doing the spotting for the tanks. Mm. Is that when you discovered the machine gun nest?
On the top, yes, on the top of the water, yeah. On the top of the knoll. Yeah.
How did you discover it, then?
Well, as I said previously, we got the tanks. When we got rid of the, what's name, to the grenade, the chinks, we went back and we informed the tanks about it, and they started plastering that area, you see, and that included the knoll at the top. And there were a couple of dead chinks up there. Anyway, we went up later to have a look at it, and that's where I got the burp gun from. But that's right above where we went round to see these chinks, you see. So they must have been forming a kind of a...
How do you think the machine gun crew have been eliminated?
Well, by the tanks.
Yeah. What did you think of the performance of the 8th Hussars?
They were good. Without the 8th Hussars there, they were there all that day, and if they hadn't have been there, there would have been far, far more casualties, because the troops, you know, our battalion, the RURs, and what was left, what the Glossers, you know, that came through there, they would never got through if the tanks hadn't have stopped them, because the Chinese were had encroached, you see, and they got behind our troops as well, you see. So as, apart from them coming this way, they were all also coming to the flank, you know, the Chinese. And without the tanks being there and, you know, stopping them from coming, they would never have got through. There would have been far more casualties.
And it was on this occasion when the wounded Chinese tried to surrender.
That's it, on the same day, yeah, yeah. That was early in the day. That was in the morning, actually, yeah. 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 But he just appeared from nowhere, coming towards the tank. I don't know where he'd been, like, but he just appeared from nowhere. We were with the tank at the time.
Was it common for Chinese to try to surrender?
No. No, it wasn't, actually.
Was he badly wounded?
No, he was walking all right. He'd just been wounded in the back, I think, and it wasn't a very bad wound. But then, as I say, we told him to go back towards the rear, you know, and on the way back he got shot. It must have been, you know, not deliberately by his own men, but by Chinese, definitely. It wasn't the British, you know.
How
rifle
you know
fire.
It wasn't deliberate?
Pardon? By the Chinese? Oh, I don't, but I couldn't even... never might have been, but it was rifle fire, definitely, with his shot there, yeah. But, it was, I mean, our men wouldn't shoot him either. Well, there were very few around there with rifles at the time of our men, because they were old tanks, you know, there were only three of us with rifles. And well, I had a Sten gun, I think.
It was then that you started to go back with the tanks?
On the, when we were, when the companies came through, yeah, we went back with the tanks, and I was late in the afternoon, I think. You lose track of time then, you know. I mean, we came through early in the morning with the reinforcements, and we were there most of the day in the afternoon. Yeah, it was late afternoon, I think, when we started going back, or early afternoon. So when we, most of the men that got through, most of the battalions got through, you know. And then the tanks were the last to pull out, and we went back with the tanks. But those men who hadn't got through, you know, jumped on the tanks, a lot of men jumped on the tanks to get through.
But you said it was frightening to be exposed on the tank.
It was, yeah. It was, yeah. It was, because they were just taking pot shots. I mean, they were all around, and they were just taking pot shots. And as I say, Tony Perrins, you know, he thought the best thing to get off and try to make your way on foot, you know, and make a better chance. But
did the Chinese hit people who were riding on the tank?
Oh yes, as I say, one of the chap alongside me, he was hit. He got in the back, and a few of them dropped off there. You know. When you're in positions such as that, you're more or less just concerned about your own safety, I think, then, and you don't notice a lot that's going on around you. But as I say, with there must have been 14 or 16 started off on that tank, and there were only about 7 or 8 got through, I think. Yeah.
And this chap, and whose last word was mother, was he an officer?
He was a fusilier, yeah.
Did you know him?
No, but funny thing, he had very prominent ears, his ears stuck out, and that's all I remember. I saw a photograph of somebody, or somebody was showing me a photograph. I said, I'm sure that's the chap who was killed. But, I don't know. But the point was, he was sitting down, and the exhaust was there, and he fell on the exhaust. Well, you can't do anything, you know. Nobody can do anything. Like, when you're in a position such as that, you can't do anything to help him at all. When we finally reached our point where they took us off, one of the medics came to, took him off. He'd been burnt right down his chest, you know, with the exhaust, because the exhaust got red hot. I got burned myself with it, but only superficially, you know. But his chest was burnt right down the exhaust.
Would he have been dead before?
He was definitely dead when he was shot. Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. Because he must have got a, it wasn't rifle fire, it must have been machine gun fire right in his back, you know.
So can you take me on to what happened after you got back to safety?
It's funny, we got back, and funny thing, it must have been after effects. I went out and found myself the hole and cried my eyes out. I hadn't been at all emotional through it, you know. It's just, I don't know. I did. I actually cried my eyes out, and I did, but I don't know why. But it was nothing, because I hadn't been there, you know, throughout all the time there, nothing like with you. But I don't know. I thought it was pent up. I don't know. But then we were resupplied with all the gear we lost. We lost most of our gear, which.
What gear did you lose?
Everything. With the problem, I had a rifle, but it wasn't my rifle. I picked up a rifle off the tank before I jumped off. But they were just stacked together. A funny thing, it wasn't funny at the time, but I recall it, and Tony Perrins doesn't recall it. When he jumped off, he yelled to me, "Give me a rifle." Scotch got a hold of a rifle and gave it to him. Like, you know, and got it. It's just made some what's name remark. This is no what's name good. He said there's no bloody bolts in it. I had to give him another one, but lot of good it did him, like, because as I say, he was wounded and taken prisoner. That was, yeah, lots of what's name? The kit bags. I don't know what's happened to those. They were back at Esron, but they must have been overrun because we had no kit at all. We had to be reassured with practically everything.
And then?
Mm-hmm. That was Pyongyang. Yongdongpo. Yongdongpo, yeah, that was the other side of the river. Yeah. The thing about Yongdongpo was that we'd been there previously, and Yongdongpo, there's a brewery, and they had these big vats and had beer in them, you know. And the lads were getting drunk on the beer. They found a couple of bodies in the bottom of the vat later on, which they'd been drinking the beer and the bodies in the bottom of the vat. We went back then to, I think we were relieved then, went back somewhere. And through the summer, we were stationed alongside a little river at one point. And it was very pleasant then. We were back beyond Seoul, I think it was, yeah. And it was very pleasant there. We had this river, and it was the summer, middle of summer. And you get the extremes there. It was extremely hot there. But I love the heat, and we had the river. We were swimming in the river, and we had, who was it? Jack Warner came across whilst we were there. You know, Jeff Warner, one day, my bike, that fella. He came across while we were there. That's right, yeah, yeah. He came across, like, to entertain us whilst we were there. Another thing I remember is in the front line, and the Salvation Army coming up, whilst we were in the front line, and they had a wagon there, and said, there's anything you want, it's tea. And they gave us a big bag of tea. Yeah, remember that. Mm-hmm. And, but then, as I say, we had a bit of a cushy time. There's some skirmishes, I think, but nothing approaching the Imjin battle at all. And then until late October, and that's when we had that last battle then. That was when they started mortaring there, and I suppose I was getting fed up or something, and it was getting a bit scary then. It was. But the it was a time the RCO had been killed during the Imjin battle. Con Foster, he was killed during the Imjin battle. We actually saw his body on the way out. He was in the jeep, and. The second in command, Lieutenant Spears, had taken over. Well, he, the CEO, always had their bodyguard with him, a fellow with a machine gun or something, you know, walking around alongside him. Anyway, this particular time we were in the. It's October, and.
In October
1951, we were in this battle. This was the last battle of the lot, and apparently the CEO's bodyguard had been killed whilst he was going around, and he came up and he said, "Proud, come with me." And I was absolutely, as I was saying, I was scared then. And I his bodyguard, and he was just striding along, and the flak was coming from everywhere, you know. And we had to go around the companies then who were, you know, dug in around there. That was the time I was scared then.
The time of?
The mortars, you know, when they're, yeah. was. I must have been coming to the end of my tether then, you know. Then the battalion withdrew, and they were ordered back to Hong Kong. They had to go to Hong Kong. I was on the short term engagement of 18 months, you see. Well, they left in November, December, I think, for Hong Kong. I'm not sure. November, that might have been. And I had to stay on, so I was transferred to Brigade HQ, the I Section Brigade HQ, and I was there until I was sent home. I came home on the Georgic, yeah. And it was beautiful. We had cabins. About half a dozen of us to a cabin, but it was beautiful. Huh? It was really...
What do you feel like now about having served in Korea?
It's a funny thing. It's an experience which... it was bad. It was cold. It was horrible. But it was an experience which... I don't know. It was an experience of a lifetime, I think. You know, it just don't... as I say, I seem to have an affinity with Korea. I've been back there about four or five times now.
Did it leave you with any after effects?
No, none whatsoever.
No nightmares or anything?
No, like no, it's a strange thing. That's the honest truth. It hasn't. I don't know. It's a funny thing. I was talking to Tony Perrins, you know, and he mentioned, he said, I've come across in the course of my doing this history, he said, I've come across a lot of chaps and they just don't want to talk about Korea. He said, I don't want to talk about it. He said, have you got any hang-ups on that? I said, no. He said, nor have I. I don't know what. It's strange, it is. I mean...
And you weren't wounded?
No. My mate was, as say, Roy Rees, no. I got a shot through my... I'm very, very fortunate, actually. During the Imjet battle, of course, we were in battle dress, you know, it was cold then, so we had the battle dress. During the summer, we had jeans. And when I got back, I had a shot through my epaulet. Gone right through my epaulet, you know, so... I was very, very fortunate. I don't know how I got out of there, but that's happened, you know.
And your job in Korea with the battalion was a fusilier in the intelligence section.
Yeah. That's correct,
in
yeah.
HQ company.
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you see any other active service after you had volunteered in 1915?
Any?
Other active service?
From...
After Korea?
After No. I went to Brigade HQ, and then I finished then, and I was discharged in February or March, I think it was, and 1952, I think.
How do you feel now about having served in the army?
I think it's a good thing. I think really, I do. I think everybody should do some service, you know. I do really. I think they should be compulsory. In Korea, they still have call up. Called up for 2 years. Everybody's called up for 2 years. Every man. And, I do think that the army definitely does something for you. It does, you know. Does.
What exactly does it do?
I don't know. I don't know. But the thing you find in the army is I suppose you've got it from everybody, the comradeship there. You're mucking there, and everybody looks after one another. They do, really. I mean, you have your knocks, you know, you have your arguments there, but the comradeship there is absolutely fantastic. In action, it is, really. It is. And everybody will tell you the same. You really, really, well, you have to live together, and you get to know each other's bloody foibles and one thing and another, you know, and what's the name of whims. But you share everything you do, really. I mean, it's really a thing to.